Welcome to Chemistry of the Mind, unlocking the brain's secrets. I'm particularly fascinated by the NMDA receptor because it's like a central processing unit for learning and memory. It's not just about receiving signals, but also about how those signals shape our brains over time.
Exactly. And I'm intrigued by how intricate this receptor is, how its subunits like GLUN1, GLUN2, and GLUN3, and their variants create this complex machinery that drives so many essential brain functions. It's like a molecular orchestra.
It really is. So today we're diving deep into the world of the NMDA receptor, exploring its structure, its role in synaptic plasticity, and its implications in various neurological disorders. The central question we're exploring is, how does this tiny receptor manage to orchestrate such profound processes in our brains?
A great question. This receptor, named after N-methyl D-aspartate, is a glutamate receptor and a calcium ion channel, primarily found in neurons. It's one of three ionotropic glutamate receptors, alongside AMPA and kinase receptors.
Right. And unlike those other receptors, the NMDA receptor acts as a coincidence detector. It requires both glutarate binding and sufficient depolarization of the neuron to open. This dual requirement makes it crucial for synaptic plasticity, the ability of synapses to strengthen or weaken over time.
It's remarkable, isn't it? This coincidence detection is because magnesium ions block the channel at resting potential. Depolarization displaces these magnesium ions, allowing calcium, sodium, and potassium ions to flow through.
Yeah, and that calcium influx is key. It triggers intracellular signaling pathways crucial for learning and memory. It's like the spark that ignites the learning process.
Now, the NMDA receptor isn't a monolithic entity. It's composed of different subunits, GLUN1, GLUN2, and GLUN3, each with its own isoforms and splice variants. This diversity gives rise to a remarkable array of receptor subtypes with distinct properties.
The GLUN2B subunit, for example, is particularly interesting. It plays a key role in learning, memory, and even feeding behaviors. It's also implicated in a range of neurological disorders.
And then there's the GLUN2BGLUN2A developmental switch. Early in development, GLUN2B is predominant, but over time, GLUN2A becomes more numerous. This shift alters the kinetics of the receptor, potentially explaining why memory abilities can be stronger in early life.
That's the idea behind Doogie mice, genetically modified mice with enhanced memory due to altered GLUN2B expression. Fascinating stuff. But this delicate balance can be disrupted. Overactivation of NMDA receptors can lead to excitotoxicity, an excessive influx of calcium that damages neurons.
This excitotoxicity is implicated in neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and Huntington's. So finding ways to block excessive NMDA receptor activity without disrupting normal function is a major therapeutic goal.
And that's where drugs like memantine come in. Memantine is an uncompetitive antagonist. It blocks the channel only when it's excessively open, sparing normal synaptic activity. It's a clever way to target the harmful effects without completely shutting down the receptor.
It's a delicate balancing act, for sure. The research into NMDA receptors has also led to the development of other drugs, like nirmexane, another memantine derivative, and even explorations into using cannabinoids for neuroprotection.
Oh, that's interesting. How so?
Well, cannabinoids have been shown to prevent some of the toxic effects of NMDA receptor overactivation, potentially offering another avenue for therapeutic intervention.
The NMDA receptor's involvement in so many neurological conditions makes it a prime target for drug development. But as you said, it's a complex receptor, and understanding its nuances is crucial for developing effective treatments.
Absolutely, and that's why research into the NMDA receptor continues to be such a vibrant and important field. It's unlocking fundamental secrets about how our brains learn, remember, and unfortunately, sometimes malfunction.
So we were talking about the crucial role of NMDA receptors in, well, everything from learning to, unfortunately, neurological disorders. It's mind-boggling how this one receptor can be involved in so much.
It really is. And the more we dig into the research, the more complex the picture becomes. Like, take glutamate, for example. It's essential for so many neural processes, but too much can be incredibly damaging.
Right. That excitotoxicity you mentioned, where excessive calcium influx damages neurons, it's a key player in so many neurodegenerative diseases.
Exactly. And it's not just the amount of glutamate, but also how it's acting on these different receptor subtypes. The GLUN2B subunit, for instance, seems particularly sensitive to this excitotoxic damage.
Which makes it a really important target for drug development, right? Trying to find that sweet spot where you can block the harmful overactivation without shutting down essential functions.
Yeah, it's like walking a tightrope. And the developmental switch from GLUN2B to GLUN2A adds another layer of complexity. It makes you wonder how much of age-related cognitive decline is tied to this shift in receptor dynamics.
I know. And then there's synaptic plasticity, the very foundation of learning and memory. It's incredible how these tiny receptors can orchestrate such long-lasting changes in the brain.
Hmm.
It's like they're constantly remodeling the connections in our brains, strengthening some and weakening others based on our experiences. And the NMDA receptor is right at the center of it all, acting as this, what did you call it, a coincidence detector?
Exactly. It needs both glutamate and depolarization to open, which makes it perfectly suited for associating different events and forming memories. It's like the gatekeeper of learning.
But, you know, it's not just about the NMDA receptor in isolation. There are all these other players involved, like AMPA receptors and even glial cells like astrocytes.
Oh, the astrocytes. They're not just passive bystanders anymore. They're actively involved in modulating synaptic plasticity, releasing D-serine, and other signaling molecules.
It's really changing our understanding of how the brain works. It's not just about neurons talking to each other, but this complex interplay between neurons and glia.
And then there's the whole long-term potentiation, LTP, and long-term depression, LTD, story. It's like the brain's way of...
Writing down memories, yeah. Strengthening the connections that are important and pruning away the ones that aren't.
Exactly. And the fact that this can happen at the level of individual dendritic spines is just remarkable. It's like each spine has its own little learning machine.
Which raises so many questions, though. Like, how does the brain decide which spines to strengthen and which to weaken? How does it maintain this balance over a lifetime? It's a bit overwhelming, to be honest.
It is. But it's also incredibly exciting. The more we learn about the NMDA receptor and its role in synaptic plasticity, the closer we get to understanding the fundamental mechanisms of learning and memory, and hopefully, to developing new treatments for neurological disorders.
I couldn't agree more. It's a complex puzzle, but we're slowly piecing it together. And with each new piece, we gain a deeper appreciation for the incredible machinery that is the human brain.
So we've established that NMDA receptors are essential, but this whole plasticity thing, how it shifts, strengthens, weakens, it's a lot.
Hmm.
It is. Like, we talked about the GLUN2B to GLUN2A switch during development, right? But what about after development? How do these receptors keep adapting throughout life?
Well, that's where activity-dependent plasticity comes in. The receptors aren't fixed. They respond to neuronal activity, sensory experiences. It's constant remodeling.
Oh, so like the more synapses used, the stronger it gets? Classic neurons that fire together, wire together?
Kind of, but it's more nuanced than that. It's not just about strengthening, it's also about weakening connections, pruning away the less important ones.
Right, like synaptic pruning. So how does this relate to NMDA receptors specifically?
Well, NMDA receptors are key players in both long-term potentiation, LTP, and long-term depression, limited. These are the cellular mechanisms thought to underlie learning and memory.
Okay, so LTP is strengthening, limited is weakening, and NMDA receptors are involved in both. How does that work?
It's all about the calcium influx. LTP happens when there's a strong calcium influx, triggering signaling cascades that strengthen the synapse. LTD, on the other hand, is associated with a smaller, more prolonged calcium influx, leading to a weakening of the connection.
So it's like a dimmer switch, high calcium, bright connection, strong memory, low calcium, dim connection, weak memory?
That's a good analogy. But it's not just the amount of calcium, it's also the specific signaling pathways activated. There are different kinases and phosphatases involved, each with its own role.
It gets complicated quickly, doesn't it? And we're only talking about the postsynaptic side. What about presynaptic NMDA receptors?
Oh yeah, those are interesting. They're less studied, but evidence suggests they might act as coincidence detectors, playing a role in spike timing-dependent plasticity.
Spike timing? So the precise timing of neuronal firing matters too?
Absolutely. It's not just about neurons firing together, but when they fire relative to each other. This temporal precision is crucial for encoding information. And then there's the whole subunit composition thing again. Different NMDA receptor subtypes seem to have different roles in plasticity.
Right, like GLUN2A versus GLUN2B. So the specific combination of subunits at a synapse can influence how it adapts to activity?
Exactly. And this subunit composition can change over time, both during development and in response to experience. It's a dynamic system.
So not only is the strength of the synapse changing, but also the very machinery that drives the change. It's like metaplasticity?
Yes, metaplasticity. It's the plasticity of plasticity, the brain's ability to adjust its own learning mechanisms based on prior experience.
Wow. It's like the brain is constantly learning how to learn better. It's mind-blowing.
So we've been talking about NMDA receptors and their crucial role in synaptic plasticity, learning, and memory. It's really quite a complex system.
Hmm.
It is, yeah. It's like this intricate dance of different molecules and signaling pathways all working together to shape how our brains adapt and learn.
And it's not just about the NMDA receptor itself. We've got glutamate, the main excitatory neurotransmitter, playing a key role. And then there are all these other factors like the GLUN2B and GLUN2A subunits that add even more layers of complexity.
Right. And the fact that the ratio of these subunits can change over time, both during development and in response to experience, is fascinating. It's like the brain is constantly fine-tuning its learning machinery.
Exactly. And that's where the concept of metaplasticity comes in, right? The plasticity of plasticity. It's mind-blowing to think that the brain can actually adjust how it learns based on previous experiences.
Totally. It's like the brain is learning how to learn better. It's a bit like those self-modifying computer programs, but, you know, way more sophisticated.
Definitely. And it makes you wonder about the implications for, say, education or even rehabilitation after brain injury. If we can understand how metaplasticity works, we might be able to develop more effective strategies for learning and recovery.
I see, yeah. That's a really interesting point. And it also highlights the importance of understanding what goes wrong in conditions like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, where these plasticity mechanisms seem to be disrupted.
Absolutely. If we can pinpoint the specific molecular changes that contribute to these disorders, we might be able to develop targeted therapies to restore or enhance plasticity.
Right. And it's not just about restoring what's lost, but also about preventing further decline. Early intervention could be key, especially given the role of NMDA receptors in excitotoxicity.
Yeah, that delicate balance between excitation and inhibition is so crucial. Too much excitation and you get neuronal damage. Too little and the brain can't learn and adapt effectively.
Hmm.
It's like walking a tightrope. And then there's the whole long-term potentiation and long-term depression story, LTP and LTD. It's remarkable how these tiny receptors can orchestrate such long-lasting changes in synaptic strength.
It is. And the fact that this can happen at the level of individual dendritic spines is just incredible. It's like each spine has its own little learning machine.
Which raises so many questions, though. Like, how does the brain decide which spines to strengthen and which to weaken? How does it maintain this balance over a lifetime? It's a bit overwhelming, honestly.
It is, but it's also incredibly exciting. The more we learn about the NMDA receptor and its role in synaptic plasticity, the closer we get to understanding the fundamental mechanisms of learning and memory, and hopefully to developing new treatments for neurological disorders.
I couldn't agree more. It's a complex puzzle, but we're slowly piecing it together. And with each new piece, we gain a deeper appreciation for the incredible machinery that is the human brain. Thanks for joining us on Chemistry of the Mind. Until next time, keep those synapses firing.